welcome to the bike show with me, Jack Thurston. Now, this could well be a sign of my advancing years, but it does seem as though bike technology is changing at a dizzying pace. There's a bike for everything these days, from road racing and time trialing, to gravel grinding and bike packing, to heavyweight touring and every shade of mountain biking. And that's not even to mention all the electric assist bikes, cargo bikes and folding bikes that are out there. There are all kinds of new technologies in bikes now, from self-adjusting all-weather hydraulic brakes to tubeless tyres that mend their own punctures and gear shifting at the press of an electronic switch, to name but three. But has all this whiz-bangery come at a price? Are modern bikes soulless, disposable products with their obsolescence built in? Today on the podcast, we're going to find out. And my method inquiry, a good old-fashioned heated debate. And with me to discuss the motion, modern bikes are rubbish, are Guy Andrews and Dave Arthur. Guy is a cycling journalist of long standing and a friend of the podcast for many years. He was editor of Cycling Today way back in the 1990s, Road Cycling UK, and was the founding editor of Rouleur magazine. He now runs the boutique publishing house Blue Train Publishing. Guy has written several books on the subject of bicycles, bicycle history, bike racing, design and technology, and has had a greasy span at hand in many more. Guy joins us from the sunny Isle of Mallorca. Welcome back to the podcast, Guy.
Thanks, Jack. Great to be back.
And to put the case in favour of modern bikes, I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast Dave Arthur. Dave is a freelance bike journalist, previously an editor at bikemagic.com, and before that, a staff writer at Road Cycling UK. I don't know if he overlapped with Guy. He is part of the team at road.cc, and he's well on the way to becoming a YouTube sensation with his own YouTube channel, Just Ride Bikes. That's where he presents and produces detailed reviews of road, gravel and mountain bikes and the latest cycling kit. And his videos have had more than 5 million views. Welcome, Dave. It's great to have you on the podcast. So the way I'd like to get the ball rolling is for each of you to take a bit of time on your soapbox to state your opening case. So Guy, you're going to be arguing that modern bikes are rubbish. And Dave, you're going to show Guy how he's got it all wrong and why, as cyclists, we've never had it so good. And I'll give each of you the floor for a minute or two, and then we can get into discussion. As speaking for the motion, and as an old friend of the podcast, Guy, I'm going to give you the floor first. Away you go.
Well, thanks, Jack. Thanks for the introduction. And I think, actually, you put the argument for and against pretty well in your lead in there. I actually sat and thought about this for quite a while, and I hate to say it, but I came to the conclusion that actually bikes are pretty good these days, and they have become better than ever. I think that modern bikes are really, really good. I think the problem is we've almost vanished down a rabbit hole of choice. I think there's almost like too much choice now for the consumer, because bikes are supposed to fill a particular genre. And I think that is the thing that annoys me intensely, because at the end of the day, a bike's a bike, as far as I'm concerned. For a long time, especially when mountain bikes were first introduced and with complete group sets and, you know, straight out of the box bikes, essentially, you could actually get a better performing bike by purchasing a frame separately and building the thing up yourself. And that was the thing, I guess, where we started out building bikes, and where we actually learned so much about bikes was in that process. For me, in a sense, that is the crux of what I think is personally wrong right now, is people really don't understand that the bike they're riding. We were out the other day, there was a group of us out, and there was a guy on a Specialized Venge, which is, I believe, the height of modern technology. And he had a few problems with it. The bottom bracket was making a noise. He got a puncture. That took about an hour and a half to fix. Then he couldn't get his brakes to work once he put his wheel back in. Eventually, he gave up on the ride and got a taxi home. I don't think that would have ever have happened maybe even 5 years ago, because most of the problems that would actually happen to your bike, you could fix with an Allen key and a brick, should you need to. the point being is that I think bikes are becoming like a homogenized lump. You know, there a lot of bikes, not all bikes, I hasten to add, but a lot of bikes now, because the choice of componentry, the choice of size, the choice of customizing your own bike, let's say, has gone. I think that in a sense is almost like development and design for its own sake, and not for actually improving things. It doesn't actually improve things that we now have 458 different bottom bracket standards, for example, when there was nothing actually wrong with a threaded bottom bracket. They're the things that I have problems with. It's actually quite interesting. I had a conversation recently with a bike manufacturer who will remain nameless. Needless to say, they're a very big bike manufacturer. And their theory is that we've reached the thin end of the wedge. There's nowhere to go now. You know, we've done everything we possibly can with materials. We've done everything we possibly can with technology. You know, we now have electronic shifting, as you were saying, Jack. We now have disc brakes. We now have tubeless tires, which I could argue aren't actually that great. But anyway, they are, you know, supposedly the cutting edge of that design. And there's nowhere else to go. So what manufacturers are going to have to start doing is competing on price, you know, and then obviously that will change things dramatically. In a good way, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying all of this is bad. I think the problem is that we've reached the thin end of the wedge and people are still trying to come up with new ideas to actually, you know, reinvent something that, let's be honest, was perfectly okay. I mean, my dad's bike, when I go back home, I still ride my dad's bike to the shops and what have you. And it's a joy to ride. It's nearly 60 or 70 years old, this bike. And it's just a fantastic bike to ride because, you know, let's be honest, the bike is like an umbrella or a coffee machine that was invented 70, 80, 90 years ago and still works perfectly well.
Well, thank you, Guy. If it's not broke, don't fix it, I think is the summary. Now, the other side of the argument, why have we never had it so good? Dave, take it away.
Okay, well, I think you summed it up in your intro really well, that the choice we have today, the cyclists, is one of the reasons that we've never had it so good, that modern bikes are much better than old bikes. And what I can see is too much choice compared to what we had back in the 60s, 70s or 80s, that choice makes it much easier to find the right bike to suit your type of riding, whether it's mountain biking, gravel, road touring, road racing. I think that choice is one of the reasons that modern bikes are much better and we've never had it so good. I think the only reason for saying old bikes are better than modern bikes is for sentimental, nostalgic reasons. Because in every measurable way, a modern bike is just better. More reliable, for a start. I mean, old bikes used to break all the time. Frames, components weren't made to same high standards they are today. So a modern bike is more reliable, lighter, stronger, more capable. You've got better gears compared to the old days. You've got wider range gears, which make cycling more accessible. So lower gears for getting up hills. You've got better brakes. I mean, brakes in the olden days were, and even not talking about disc brakes, just modern rim brakes compared to what we had back in the old days are much better. So new bikes are more reliable, more accessible, makes coming to the sport of cycling, whatever your background, whether it's wanting to race or do a long distance ride, it's much easier because there's a bike that's going to suit your aspirations as a cyclist. Whereas when Guy was talking about that example of building a frame, you basically had a choice of a race bike and a touring bike and you had to fit to that type of riding. And when you look at a picture of Eddie Merckx racing on a bike, hunched over the handlebars, the position looks awful, like really uncomfortable and not ergonomic in any way compared to bikes that now fit you properly with more handlebar positions and more frame dimension, better geometry. So yeah, cycling much more accessible than it ever used to be. And also more accessible in terms of price as well. It's easier get distracted by a 10 grand superbikes at one end. But at the entry level, when I think about my first mountain bike when I was a teenager compared to what you get now for the same money, comparably, so much better. And if you're new to cycling, coming to cycling now, the experience you have of cycling and buying a bike is vastly improved compared to what you would have had even 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago for me. And so I think, yes, bikes have got better and made cycling as an experience better because you can enjoy it in different ways, made it more accessible, bikes more reliable. I've had the experience riding an old bike, actually, a replica bike of the 60s and 70s steel bike. And it was fantastic in a way, but also reminded me how good bikes are compared to these days. It really highlighted how good bikes have gotten, brakes, gears. The only thing that old bike had compared to modern bikes is how smooth the ride was. But then it's heavy, slow. So yeah, not comparable to modern bike in any way, really. So yeah, modern bikes are better than old bikes, I think.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, well, I'm going to just snapshot a couple of critiques of each of you. So Guy, you are the incorrigible retro grouch. You know what you know what you like, and you like what you know. Whereas Dave, you are a slave to the bike industry, and you just will lap up whatever it is that they're going to bring out each year and say, yeah, yeah, this is great. And look, here's my 2,000 word review of it.
Well, it's funny. When I've been in the cycling trade for quite a while, not as long as Guy, I'm clearly a lot younger than Guy. But when I met Guy, he was editor of a very successful website, and he was writing about new bikes. And it's interesting to see him become this grouch. When I first met him, he was writing about the latest bikes and introduced me to the latest state-of-the-art bikes from Parley and Specialized and so on. And he was enthusiastic then about new bikes, but it seemed to have hit a point somewhere in the last 10 years, 15 years, where he's like, nope, too much technology, let's stop now. I think that I see that a lot of people, like, they reach a point where they think too much new stuff, I want to kind of pause now. I'm quite happy with where technology got to now, and I can relate to that, I think.
Yeah, I think that would be a very easy argument to rage on, if you like. I mean, I've got a bike here, a carbon bike. It's 2 years old. You know, it's modern technology. It's a great bike. It's super light. You know, I have absolutely no problem with buying stuff that is, you know, that is peak bike, if you like. Let's call it that for now. But the reason I bought this particular bike is it allowed me to use rim brakes, it allowed me to use a threaded bottom bracket. I mean, I don't want to get too technical here, but essentially it allowed me to use a lot of the technology that I already have that's fine, that works perfectly well. You know, I've done very little purchasing of new stuff because I don't need it. You know, I mean, once upon a time when I was a bike racer and when I was working at Road Cycling UK, I was still racing bikes. You kind of want the best stuff you can get, and that you would believe would be the stuff that's, you know, the latest and greatest that the pros are using. And I think at that point, actually, I would slightly disagree, because I think actually what you find now is the stuff that the pros are using is not the stuff they actually want to use. It's the stuff that they're told to use. And then disc brakes is a great example of that. I mean, I know a lot of pros that are saying they'd rather have caliper brakes and lighter wheels, or they'd rather have a disc brake at the front and a caliper brake at the back, all sorts of bizarre kind of setups that they've been experimenting with. I think my big problem, to be honest, is this kind of bike in a box mentality that we've got to now, where the manufacturers have kind of got a stranglehold on everybody. And this is the bike. And I agree with you, Dave, completely. The choice is just phenomenal now. I mean, it's incredible. But I don't necessarily think that that's great for everyone. And I would slightly disagree that I think for the person coming into it, it's easier. I actually think now it's more confusing than it was, because there are so many different genres of bikes. I mean, you could argue that, you know, you could sell anyone a gravel bike and that's the perfect bike for all occasions. You could argue all of this sort of stuff. But, you know, unfortunately as well, I think living in the Western world does tend to put slightly different sort of first world problems in for us, because, you know, having all that choice, where at the end of the day, kind of all you need, as I was saying earlier, is one bike, you know, and a bike from 50 years ago is just as good as a bike of today. That's sort of the argument I'm trying to come to. Mm. And that's not being a retro grouch. That's just, I mean, I don't think that's being a retro grouch at all. I hope.
Well, let's try and break this down a little bit, and we'll talk about function and the kind of functional utilitarian aspects of it, and then maybe we'll get on to the kind of aesthetic side of things, because I think that's always quite interesting. A bicycle is a machine that you can use, but as it's been described as the beautiful machine, and a good looking bike is something that we all want. I feel, in terms of function, drawn in two competing directions. Because on the one hand, I love the idea of the maintenance-free bicycle. I hate fettling with my bike and fixing it when it breaks. It really, really annoys me. I hate cleaning my bike. So the idea that I could have a bike that requires as little of me as my car requires of me as a mechanic would be excellent. But on the other hand, I don't like the way in which a lot of components seem to be kind of black boxes that I don't really understand. And if they, you know, the disc brake, there's it's kind of covered in this horrible gungy sort of film of dirt, and then it occasionally squirts out some hydraulic fluid, and then I don't quite know why it's gone wrong, why suddenly it's not biting on the rotor. And likewise, electronic shifting, I hear all these stories of people, you know, 120 kilometers out from their home, suddenly run out of battery, and it's, oh man, and I guess you could break a gear shift cable, although that's never happened to me in my life, but you could obviously carry a spare one if you wanted to. So the way in which things have become non-user serviceable or black boxes that you have to kind of take them back to the dealer, back to the bike shop to get fixed, I think is a problem. Because in some ways, one of the nice things about a bicycle, and here I'm kind of completely contradicting myself in terms of the desire for an entirely maintenance-free bike. One of the nice things about a bicycle is that with a little bit of mechanical understanding, you can pretty much fix most things with a couple of tools. And I think this is the point that you were making, Guy, about the guy who had to get a taxi home because his black box broke and, you know, it didn't go anymore. What do you think about that, Dave? You're going to speak up for new technology. Do you think that accusation against new technology being these mysterious black boxes that work fine until they don't work, and then you're really in trouble? What do you think about that argument?
Yeah, no, I totally get where you come from, but I think a modern disc brake bike with electronic gears is and can be extremely reliable and not require any maintenance at all. But if it does go wrong, it's maybe harder to fix. You know, you can't fix the electronics on a side of the road or serve the brakes on a side of the road either. But I have memories of dismantling my old mountain bike on my mum's kitchen floor when I was a teenager, servicing the bearings, because you had to regularly service the bearings, take the bearings out and they go under the fridge and put more grease in. Having to do that on a regular basis with headset and the hubs and the bottom bracket. And I don't miss that at all. So yes, the old bikes, you can service them, but you had to service them because they needed servicing all the time, because they, you know, always go out of adjustment with a headset. So compared to that, modern bikes are so much more reliable. And I'm always testing bikes, and they don't need that servicing. They don't need the regular servicing and bearings, like cartridge bearings. You pop them out, but they last an insane amount of time compared to the regular service intervals of those old bikes. So don't miss that. So I think there are improvements there. But I guess there is that idea that a modern bike is complex, but generally they don't go wrong. I mean, there are cases like Guy mentioned where a bike can go wrong. But if you had a 70s road bike and the cotted crank set or whatever came off, would you have the right tools to fix it by the side of the road? Probably not. So I don't know whether old bikes are any more repairable when you're out riding compared to a modern bike.
Fit and forget, Guy. Isn't that a great thing, yeah, then? Fit and forget.
I don't know. I think we're probably not wanting to criticise both of your mechanic skills, but I think in part, I think one of the reasons why I got so involved in cycling was I loved fixing bikes.
But you had to fix bikes all the time. They needed fixing.
Yeah, arguably, I think you're right, Dave. But I think now, I think the issue is I can't fix those bikes now. I mean, I can't. And it's the same with a car. You know, if you want to take your car now, I mean, I don't have a car anymore. I used to have, my last car I had was a 1986 Renault 4, which I loved to bits, but I could fix it. I could actually fix it. But, you know, given, I mean, it does make me sound like even more of a retro grouch. But the point is that I think I would probably struggle to fix this guy's Specialized Venge. I didn't want to touch it because, to be honest with you, most of the technology is new to me. You know, he had, I don't know, SRAM, RED, wireless shifting, all of that sort of stuff. I mean, incredible bit of kit. It's actually another interesting point that I think is worth bringing up is the professional mechanics with the bike teams, who I speak to a fair bit. There's a couple of guys I know And what they're saying is quite interesting is that mechanics, now that they're coming in to work for the teams, they can't build wheels. They don't know how to glue on tubular tires. They probably couldn't build a cabled bike as quickly or as accurately as one of the older mechanics could. But of course, they can use a laptop. They can program the derailleurs to shoot from the team car. They have all of this technical ability beyond, which I think is, you know, equally interesting. And if I was racing a bike, I would want that technology, don't get me wrong, or have at least have it available. But I think there is this element, and I think what Jack you're trying to allude to is a bit of a romantic ideal, I guess. But bikes were just this wonderfully simple moving machine that you could see every component and every element of that component and how it worked. And I think that was the joy of them. And I think that joy has been slightly washed away with as technology has improved and improved and improved. You can't beat the simple beauty of a fixed wheel bike. You know, they're just beautiful. You know, I mean, and they ride so well. You know, as you said earlier, Dave, you know, they may be heavier than modern bikes, but they're so smooth. You know, everything works. So I think that can kind of, well, I
have my fun winter bike, which is an aluminium kind of adventure bike, road plus type of bike. And going down a hill in the middle of winter, the rear wheel ate the rear mech, completely chewed it up and pulled off not only the mech hanger, but a big chunk of the frame itself, the aluminium frame. So I thought, okay, I've got to get a new mech hanger. This is a disposable part. This is what it's done its function of braking rather than letting the frame break. Where do I get one of those? Called up Evans. No, not in stock. Sorry, don't have this mech hanger. Go onto a site with mech hangers. 10,000 mech hangers to choose from. End up in some rabbit hole on eBay, tracking one that's the same but under a different name from a different brand because it's an OEM product or whatever. Managed to buy a couple. Think, okay, well, that'll keep me going. But at least with steel, you know, if something breaks, you can generally, like a mech hanger, or you can bend it back. As the late, great Ron Cooper said to me, you know, carbon fiber bike, brilliant until it crashes. And then it's dustpan and brush time, as he put it to me. Yeah. What about that? What about durability? And that obviously links to, I suppose, sustainability. Are the bikes of today going to be around in 10 years' time, or are we just constantly replacing them with something else out of the factory? And is there maybe a built-in obsolescence? Is that really a genuine strategy of the bike companies?
So I suspect that obsolescence thing is part of the demonic plan of the bike industry, should we say. But, you know, this whole idea that a bike will become a sort of a homogenous whole without a component set, without a replaceable you know, without replaceable parts that you can easily get at a bike shop. I think that's probably where we're going, because I think it's in the interests of the bike industry for people to buy new bikes fairly regularly. And I don't want to be cynical about it. I mean, that happens in every industry. It's not unusual. I mean, you know, your dishwasher does the same, your tumble dryer, whatever. They all have a shelf life. And I think bikes probably are in that same position. The thing I really despise, and it really gets on my nerves, is the fact that we now have to buy a new bike because they no longer make the part that actually worked fine. That it's not, I don't wish to make that sound like I'm being a complete retro garage, but it's true. I mean, there was nothing wrong with bottom brackets as they were. And now, for every different frame that comes out from every different manufacturer, there is their own standard. And that just seems insane to me. I mean, a good friend of mine who runs a bike shop says, you know, I now have to have at least 20 different bottom bracket tools. Whereas once upon a time, I had two. You know, and that to me just seems a little bit, I mean, it may be a bit cynical of me to say this, and I'm sure it is quite cynical. However, I do believe that's where the bike industry is going. It wants you to go to them for a complete bike every 2 to 3 years.
I'll agree that the so-called standards is a bit of a nightmare and a mess if you're trying to replace a mech hanger or choose the right bottom bracket. But is that just a side effect of bike brands, engineer, designer trying to make better products? It got me thinking when I was preparing for this, like back in the 70s when Ernesto Camargo was making a bike, was he worried about whether his bike would still be rideable in 10, 20, 30 years? Probably not. Those bikes were made to be the best performance then, in that period only. And I don't think there's any, that hasn't changed. There's no bikes aren't being made now to last 20, 30 years. I don't think any company, whether making bikes or cars or coffee machines even, are worried about this product lasting for 20, 30 years. I don't think that is currently in the design kind of brief. That probably changing though, with an emphasis on sustainability and environmental awareness. So I don't think bikes back then were made to last any better. I think, and also when Rally were making bikes back in the 70s, they made millions of steel bikes. Where are they all now? There aren't many steel bikes out there. And during the lockdown, it'd be interesting watching the price of retro bikes go through the roof, because trying to get hold of parts like Campag group sets from back in the day is really difficult. So there isn't much evidence of those millions of bikes that were made back in the 60s and 70s and 80s still around. Very few numbers. So that makes me question whether we're in any worse situation now compared to when we were back then, because we aren't surrounded by steel bikes everywhere. I don't know where they've all gone. I guess they've gone to landfill or they've in garage sheds and stuff. So I don't think we can blame the bike brands for not worrying about whether a product be usable in 20 years, because a design brief for a product is probably a few years. And I think that's the same in the 70s as it is in the 2020s, that they don't design bikes the last 10 years. But it does seem like it's a mess at the moment, because you've got so many standards and lots of bikes designed with, you have to use that seat post, that handlebar. And I do see lots of concern from my followers who are worried about, can they buy replacement handlebars or seat posts in a few years' time for the bike? But could you buy a replacement seat post for a 1970s Eddie Merckx now? Or even 10 years after it's first made?
I think Rally had their own proprietary bottom bracket thread, which is the main stumbling block if you're trying to do a kind of refit of a, say, like you've got a Rally 20, or the Stowaway, which are those really classic kind of shopper bike, but actually quite a handy bike if you want sort of the poor man's Brompton in a way, and they just fold in half. To do a sort of modern version of that, your biggest challenge is the bottom bracket issue, because you cannot get those Rally parts anymore because they're proprietary. So I guess the proprietary standards have been around for as long as cycling's been around for, Guy.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't disagree with that. I just think that, as I said earlier, this sort of thin end of the wedge idea that we've got to now, I think is a very interesting place to be, because when we look back over the history, and obviously it's easy to look back with hindsight and say, the bike that Camargo was making in the 70s and 80s may not exist. I mean, a lot of them weren't designed, they were designed to be as light as possible and to transmit as much power as they possibly could through to the back wheel, and that was it. That was the remit. I mean, they just happened to be, beautifully made and look gorgeous as well as that. So there's those things to take into consideration. But I think I don't know. I think what's interesting to me as an aesthete, I can't say that. How do you say it? It's how the bike looks as much as how the bike rides that makes you want to ride it. I mean, I've had bikes down the years that just look pig ugly, and it doesn't matter how good it is, you just don't want to ride it. And I think that's a very personal connection that you have with the bike. I think everybody has a personal connection with one bike that they think, given a lovely sunny day with a gentle breeze, that's the bike that I would want to take out. Of all the bikes I've seen in the last, say, 5 or 6 years, I don't see one that I think, oh my God, that's a really good looking bike. Because I think a lot of what's been done in the past has met all that criteria. And now we've got to a point where basically manufacturers compete on a spangly paint job because they all look the same.
You've got tube physics is with materials is the basis of this, isn't it? With a steel tube, a round form, is unless you're, in some exotic Columbus Max sort of situation. But basically you've got like a round, fairly thin, narrow diameter steel tube, which is the kind of classic form of the bicycle, you know, the platonic form, if you like. But then with new materials, and I suppose it started with Cannondale and oversized aluminium tubes, and then, you know, hydroformed tubes that aren't cylindrical. And then you get carbon fiber reinforced polymer, which can be any shape you want, pretty much, once it's gone into the mold and come out the other side. And things come out looking very different. Is that a problem, Dave? Do you mind, or do you find it appealing that a bike can be squashed into, you know, all sorts of aerodynamically advantageous shapes? And does it, you know, when you show up for a club run with like a huge amount of material around your bottom bracket, does that kind of send tremors of fear into the people you're going to be riding with, because you're going to be transmitting so much power down there?
Yeah, look at the size of my Pressfit bottom bracket. I think old bikes, undeniably pretty, but they all look the same, don't they? Skinny steel frame, brake fork, wafer thin tyres, rubbish brakes. And bikes these days give a designer much more freedom. You can curve the tube profiles and add an aero if you want, and you've got bigger space for a massive logo, which I dislike, but that's another topic. The question of whether bikes look better, I think, I mean, that's subjective, obviously. And I think a lot of it comes down to when you join the world of cycling. And for me, one of the prettiest bikes ever made is the Lotus 108 Chris Boardman rode early 90s, kind of, you know, 12 or when he won that race. So for me, that's one of the prettiest bikes. For me, it was a dynamic, futuristic, space age looking bike, which looked nothing like the bikes that came before it. And for me, that vision of the future was really exciting. And for me, my background is not road racing, mountain biking during the 90s, which Guy might remember, a period of, well, intense development. And it seemed like every other week a new bike came out with a radical suspension configuration and like the gold rush almost. And that really captured me. I think that's what kept me interested in cycling. And as a tech writer, is that seeing that continual development, making bikes better and better. And it's exciting and it's fascinating to see what bike designers can do with what essentially is, you know, two wheels and a frame that has to be, if you're looking at race bikes, they have to be within the same dimension because of UCI rules. But there's so much freedom within that. But there's another question whether riding a modern bike compared to an old bike, if you're racing, you obviously take the aero bike with the carbon frame. But if you're just riding around a sunny country lanes, does that all that technology give a better experience or more enjoyment of riding bikes? Possibly not, possibly. Depends on what sort of cycling you're doing and what sort of ride
you
are.
So, Dave, you must be delighted with that background, that the gravel bike industry has essentially reinvented the 1990s mountain bike. You've done a look at that on your channel, haven't you?
Yeah, so I'm working on a video where I bought a 1991 Kona Love Dome, which is, you know, when mountain biking started really kind of taking off from the repack days. Bit before I got into mountain biking in the mid 90s, so a bit before my time, and comparing that to a gravel bike, and they are on paper quite similar, but when you ride them, they're so different. The gravel bike, with all the gears, the brakes, the frame advances, all the other advances, make it a far superior ride. It's more accessible, it's lighter, it's faster, it's just better in every way. But yeah, quite fun comparing the two, because on paper they're quite similar geometry. But yeah, it does make me laugh when people say a gravel bike is just a 90s mountain bike, because if you ride a 90s mountain bike, you know it's not at all. And
so can we agree on a few things? Can we agree that lower gears and fatter tires are something that has come into cycling sort of the mainstream recently and marks a kind of break with the era in which people were sold essentially scaled down versions of race bikes? You had people out on a little afternoon poodle with a 52 tooth chainring, which, you know, is absolutely no need for that on a bike that isn't being used to win money in a race. And so we've got lower gears and fatter tires to give a more comfortable ride, and tire technology has improved dramatically. You've now got high volume tires which are made with the quality of ingredients and materials and manufacturing of traditional fast racing tires, but they're much bigger. I mean, that is a new thing, because it used to be quite difficult to get a fast rolling fat tire, but now there's loads of them around. Guy, can we convince you on that? I think, Dave, I could see you nodding on those ones. Can we agree with that? Low gears and fat and lots of rubber is a good thing.
Yeah, I just wanted to come back on something that Dave was talking about there, which was the Lotus Superbike, should we call it? Because obviously I remember that era very well. And like him, I thought that was an incredibly exciting development. Obviously, the UCI put paid to any developments further from that, and we had to go backwards. And that obviously limited bike design for quite a number of years. But anyway, so I would definitely agree on that. I would definitely agree with you as well, Jack. I think lower gears are the way to go. And obviously now the variety of low gears and the quantity of low gears you can have on your bike is exponential. You know, you could just go on forever about that discussion. I think the tyres thing is quite an interesting one, because I think the tyre technology that we had 100 years ago is pretty much what we have today, arguably. In actual fact, I'd say some of my elders, if you like, would argue that tubular tyres of the 60s and 70s were where it was at, and tyres of today are absolutely crap. So I'm not trying to go down that route, because I kind of agree with what you're saying,
Jack. But you
can't get
a 40mm tubular tyre from the 1960s, can you? To take you down a towpath or over some, you know, rocky tracks or whatever.
No, but if you look at, because obviously I can't comment because I don't know anybody that rode in the 1920s, but if you look at what the bikes and the tubular tyres that they were riding back then, they look pretty similar to what they're riding now for gravel riding, because it was essentially gravel riding, you know, yeah. That's what they were doing. So I think there is a bit of a strange one with tyre technology. I personally don't think tyres are a lot better than they were when I started cycling, particularly. I think they are better from the point of view of the range, of the sizes
that is a big,
you can get.
Big improvement, isn't it, though?
Absolutely, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, riding a 28mm tyre now on a wide rim on a road bike gives you bags of grip, but then it gave you bags of grip 20 years ago if you could get them. I don't necessarily think that the technology has changed in a way. I think the pros would argue that they would want better tyres before they had better brakes, for example.
And take something totally uncontroversial, lighting, you know, LED lighting. Yeah. It's far better than those Ever Ready. You're not riding those Ever Ready things with the lead acid, are you, Guy, still?
No, I'm fully LED, Jack.
Okay,
yes.
Very good. So, yeah, I mean, if we put LEDs as probably incontrovertibly better, bigger tyres, lower gears, more gears. Now, more gears, is that a good thing? Like, I can agree that lower gears is a good thing, and bikes that can handle lower gears, so you don't have to, you know, mash your way up a hill. You can spin up. But do we need more gears? Because to me, that just spells more expense, because it's harder to make these 13-speed cassettes, more expensive chains. It's now cost £50 to get a replacement chain for like 11 or 12 speed. What's wrong with 8-speed?
Nothing. It's fine. Works.
Dave, what's wrong with 8-speed? Why have we got to go to 13, 14, 15? Where does it stop?
Well, we've had triple chain sets in the past, haven't we? So it's just, I don't think we have more gears now, but I don't think it's that much more. We're just kind of changing where the gears are positioned, located on the bike, aren't we? So I think, yeah, more gears are better, lower gears. I'd also add geometry to this as well. I know, like, in the early 2000s, sporty bikes, endurance bikes came along. So you now have bikes that are more relaxed, so you can enjoy that kind of race experience without being hunched over like Eddie Merckx and giving yourself a back injury. So bikes are, you know, more accessible in that way.
So this is all stuff. This is quite interesting, because it's all stuff where the bike for the enthusiast or the recreational rider is becoming more and more different from the bike that will be ridden to victory in the Tour de France. And we're basically agreeing that is a good thing.
Yeah, but I would actually take a slight issue with what Dave's saying about geometry, because, you know, you used to be able to buy a Colnago in about 13 different sizes with two different top tube lengths and a variety of different seat and head angles available if you wanted them. So it's kind of like, I don't necessarily agree that geometry actually went down the pan when mountain bikes first came around, because we had small, medium and large bikes rather than, you know, a host of different sizes. So, you know, I'm kind of defeating my argument here for the proliferation of lots of different things. But my point is I think, I mean, Ron Cooper is a great example of someone who could build a bike to fit somebody perfectly and, you know, built bikes for the top pros of his time. But it's quite interesting that when you look at the sort of the riders from, as I say, from pre-mountain bike times, you'll see that actually their bikes fitted them a lot better than the bikes tend to fit them these days. I mean, we did have that proliferation of very long top tubes, which was a bit odd, and definitely fashion-based, because there was no scientific basis for that to work better than having a shorter top tube. But anyway, I'm getting into detail. I think there is an argument to say that geometry for the sort of one bike fits all sort of mentality hasn't improved. But I would agree. I would definitely agree with what you said, Jack, about gears. I think personally, especially as my knees aren't quite as strong as they used to be, I like as many gears as possible on my bike. Because I think it just makes it more enjoyable, you know, when you start to get tired and it just makes life a lot easier. So I'm all in favour of that.
Maybe it's time for an e-bike, Guy. Just put
it is there. It always it's always time for a new bike.
an e-bike, I think Dave said.
An e-bike. Oh yeah. E-bike. I have been eyeing up a couple actually.
I mean, that is an area, again, to make the case for change and modernity, the electric assist bikes. Phenomenal. It could have the potential to really revolutionize urban transport, personal mobility. Likewise, cargo bikes. You know, there have been cargo bikes around for a long time, but they are much better now, especially with
the incredible
electric assist that you can have. So I'm feeling as though I'm leaning towards we've never had it so good, which is kind of not where I thought I was going to be at the beginning of this, because I have to say, I had a bike made for me a couple of years ago by Richard Hallett, who I think used to work with Dave. And I was really choosing between two bikes, and it was getting Richard to build me one of his 650B adventure bikes, or buying a bike which you reviewed very well, called the Fairlight Secan, which is a kind of a modern Graventure, do-it-all type of bike. And I ended up going with Richard because for the very simple reason that I write books about genteel cycle touring, and I need a bike that's going to look good lent up against a 12th century church. And I didn't think that a compact frame and all these disc brakes and whatnot was going to fit the bill in my photographs. I don't know if I made the right choice, though. I still don't know, because I haven't actually ridden that bike. Are you still happy with that bike? You rode it, reviewed it, and then bought it.
That's right. Yeah, I reviewed it and I liked it so much, I bought it. But it's largely because I met Dom, the designer behind it, that I bought it. And I think that taps into something that, while modern bikes are undeniably better in performance and function and accessibility, they have lost something. And it's something that Guy talked about, is that, you know, in the old days, you need a person making your frame. You go to, you know, frame shop and they'd measure you up and they would tell you what size bike you needed and make it for you. And that's been lost. You know, bikes all made in a few factories in the Far East and, you know, incredible manufacturing capability. But who is Giant? Who is Trek? Who is Specialized? They're just big corporations. So I think we have lost that, a connection with the person making a frame. And I think that's where the bespoke scene has come in and filled that gap. But, you know, very expensive options for people who can afford it. So I think that has been lost. But I don't know, given how popular cycling is compared to what it was 40 years ago, I don't know how that could be regained. I mean, the way bikes are manufactured now are mass manufactured and you can't kind of undo that.
In the case of something like a Fairlight that we're talking about, that there is this middle ground, because it's essentially the old Italian small manufacturing, so not total custom frame building, but small manufacturing that have, you know, once the Italian men on their, you know, old men on their road bikes went to carbon fiber, suddenly no one wanted a steel bike, unless you were in a startup in Shoreditch who could, or commission, I don't know, a couple of hundred bikes from one of these factories and run a company, start a company like Fairlight, which you might have had trouble doing in the golden days, when it was, you know, rally or Ron Cooper, you know, and nothing in between. And so we maybe are in an era where there are people making kind of interesting, not exactly custom bikes, but bikes that are expressions of a designer's vision, and are can be produced at a price that is not custom bike high, but you know, it's sort of competitive almost with the actual true mass produced bikes. Is that a fair assessment?
I'd say so. I mean, I think there are some interesting companies out there as well right now. I mean, like Mason, Dob Mason, building some really nice modern bikes, but in quite a traditional way. And I think that, you know, when you have stuff like that being produced, I think I'm less sort of scared for the future, if you like, because I know that then component manufacturers will still be looking to make components for those kind of bespoke applications, which, you know, to be honest with you, all intents and purposes, there's nothing really that different between one of those and a top of the range specialized in every respect, other than the fact that there's a bit more care and attention to detail gone into the Mason, perhaps, I would argue. But I think those things have always been the case. But then, you know, to be fair, I really would like to say, for the record, I am fully aware that there were some bloody awful bikes made back in the day. And you know, as there always will be. I think that the big difference now, and it comes back to the thin end of the wedge conversation, is the fact that it's harder actually now to make a crap bike than it is to make a good bike. Whereas, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you could still, you know, come up with something like the Kirk Precision, for example, which was, you know, an interesting concept, but absolutely dreadful. So it's like it's that difficulty, isn't it? Where I think, I don't know, I guess it's like music, you know, the music still exists from 50 years ago, if you want to listen to it. And I think that's personal choice, isn't it? It's like, you know, I have steel bikes, I've got aluminium bikes, I've got carbon bikes, and I like them all. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And you don't feel that you have to ride one rather than the other to keep up with your riding companions?
Jack, I've got to the age now where I just do not give a shit. If I ride the bike that, yeah, I do, I've got a very nice Allied road bike. It's really light. I can keep up with the gang, if you like, on it, because it climbs well. It does everything well. It's a brilliant bike. What can I say? And it's a modern bike.
Well, let's head towards the end of our heated debate. And I want you to get out your crystal balls and tell us where you think things are going to be going in the next 10 years. Have we reached the end of the line? Is this the end of bicycle history? Are things going to carry on getting better and lighter and faster and making us happier? Or are we ending up in some sort of dystopian world where you can't even mend your own puncture? You have to call in the service company to fly out a drone that will do it for you. Where are we headed in the next 10 or 15 years in bike technology? Dave, you know where we are now. You're right at the cutting edge. Where are we going?
Blimey. That's a really difficult question to answer. I'm hopeful there's still plenty of innovation and room for improvement. And given like the standards issues we talked about, there's clearly room for improvement to making, you know, bikes are better, but they could be made much more, much better in many regards. We talk about peak bike, and I think it does feel like we have reached peak bike. Like, how can bikes get any better? But I'm sure that happened in the 70s and 80s and 90s, maybe not so much in the 90s because we had like loads of material development. But I'm sure there could be new materials and new ways of designing bikes, and maybe if you use UCI relax the rules, there might be room for development there. So I'm hopeful there's always, well, not hopeful because my job depends on it, like anything like that, but no, I'm always excited to see what they come up with. I'm always surprised with what they come up with. So I'm sure there will be some interesting developments, and it does make me wonder what bikes now will be remembered as, or how they'll be remembered in 20 year time, how we lust after a 70s, 80s bike. Now, will we lust after a Avenge in 20 year time, or will this be a period of, you know, bikes we forget about, or whether people will be trying to piece together an old Avenge from new old stock parts on eBay? Or so that'd be a fascinating thing to see. And I think generally looking at how bikes have improved, I can't see why they won't continue improving for the next 10, 20, 30 years. No, there's still plenty of a tire that never punctures is the holy grail, surely. You never have to pump up a tire or fix a flat or oil a chain, wireless brakes, and plenty of room for improvement still, I think. Yes, I'm hopeful.
Guy, what do you think?
Well, I kind of agree with what Dave's saying wholeheartedly. I don't know. I think in 20 years' time, I'll be very interested to see what the trike situation's like, because I'll probably be at that age where an electric assist trike will be where I'm at. but I think there are... I think what you were saying earlier, Jack, about cargo bikes and about electric assist bikes, I think is fascinating. And I think that technology is going to explode in the next 10 years. I think that's where it's kind of at, because especially when you look at what manufacturers are doing with, making lighter and lighter electric bikes, road bikes, mountain bikes, that I think is definitely going to be an area to watch. I'd like to see tandems make a bit of a comeback, to be honest. I think tandems were loads of fun, and people seem to have lost that interest in doing things together, should we say. I think that the tendency is, I notice here living in the sunshine, is couples and friends can go out and ride together on an electric assist bike and a normal road bike or a normal mountain bike. And I think I don't know, especially after the year that we've been through, I kind of just wish for more time to go cycling. And I think, that's the bit I think that people forget about. I know Dave and I have had a lifetime in the industry, so we're especially me, cynical old hacks. But at the end of the day, I still love going cycling. It's, for me, it's the biggest pleasure, and I don't really care what bike it's on. I was riding around town this morning on a three-speed, trying to find a microphone, actually. But anyway, the point is that it was lovely. It was a lovely morning, and it's freedom, isn't it? I mean, cycling is freedom. Yeah, so yeah. Freedom of choice, let's say. Freedom of choice.
I think we've reached something of a meeting of minds, and it has been a super illuminating discussion. I think it's a debate that will run and run between, the future junkies and the retro grouches. And I hope it's been useful to you if you're considering splashing out on a new bike or a second-hand one or a third or a fourth or a fifth-hand one. And as always, I'd love to know what you think. So do drop me a line. The email address for the podcast is bikeshow@gmail.com. Guy, Dave, thanks for coming on the podcast. And perhaps now we've got a short amount of time for you to give listeners a brief heads up about your latest projects and anything interesting that's in the pipeline, and where they can find you online or elsewhere. Dave.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, thanks for having me. Been a fun debate as ever with a guy. So you can find me on YouTube, a channel called Just Ride Bikes, which is my main thing these days. So reviewing bikes, old and new, doing some fun comparisons with old and new bikes, which fits in nicely with this conversation. So by the time this podcast airs, hopefully those will be live. So yeah, check out Just Ride Bikes.
Guy?
Well, obviously I'm the Luddite here. So what I do is print media. I run a small publishing company. We work with various different people and we produce beautiful books. You can find us at bluetrainpublishing.com. And we don't have a YouTube channel just yet, but you never know.
All right.
Coming soon.
Okay. Well, thank you both. And thanks as ever for listening. Until next time, goodbye.